RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
We are back in, and it is another edition of our digital movie radio show. We've seen that. We love those movies from the 80s, 90s, and more. And a little love is in the air because it is Valentine's Day at the time that we're taping right about now. We've got a special edition centering around what else? Look, we're guys. I'm T.J. Reeves. I'm based here in the Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater area. He is the famous Jay. Jay Betzel, he's the famous Jay on social media. He is based in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And as guys, we're all about what the women around us in our lives want. So that's going to be a big subject here today. I should make mention where we've seen that on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram. Are you feeling kind of a little bit in the romantic comedy kind of mood right about now, Jay? Hey.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. Looking forward to talking about this one. Kind of a little backstory on why we decided, well, we picked this one. First off, we hadn't done any Mel Gibson movies yet, and although he's not the star he once was, he was a huge star in our heyday. And we had the movie come out this past week at the theater, What Men Want, which is a reimagining of the 2000 film What Women Want.
I can save everybody that's in our listening audience that's of the male persuasion about going to see that movie, because if TJ was making the What Men Want movie, there would be certain things on the checklist, such as control of the remote control if you're in a household with kids, especially chips and dips, especially on Sunday to eat some snacks in and around football, maybe a golf tee time because you and I golf. Those are some different things that men want, at least that I'm around. This is more like guys trying to figure out what do women really want, right, is what this movie is about.
This movie is about a chauvinistic ad exec who literally falls into his bathtub and electrocutes himself because he has his hair dryer, and then he can literally hear women's thoughts. So it's not like he's not the kind of guy that cares what women think. He's the kind of guy that is manipulating it to benefit himself.
All right. So with all of that out of the way, we need to do this formally, as we customarily do on We've Seen That. We're going back. We're going back in time. Mel Gibson, Helena Hunt. Here we go.
That girl we met last night at the club, nothing happened after you put her in the cab, right?
It did. Something happened. She said she had to be in bed early.
Well, I had her in bed by 11.
Nick Marshall thought he was God's gift to women.
Cappuccino extra foam. Taller grande.
Grande? Or at least I like to think so.
Next.
But he's about to discover what women think.
Let me get your cab, sir.
Thank you, Flo.
You're welcome, my little sweet buns.
What did you say?
Me? Nothing.
I can hear what women think.
Whoa, lighten up that aftershave, buddy.
I'm talking personal, private stuff. The stuff that nobody on earth is supposed to hear. I hear that stuff. It's driving me crazy. Even French poodles, I can hear them.
Monsieur, I need to poo-poo.
I don't know how this happened to you or why, but you may just be the luckiest man on earth.
Hello, I'm Darcy.
Think of the possibilities.
Great. Photographs.
No clue they're all Margaret Burke White.
They're not all Margaret Burke White, are they?
Yeah, they are.
This guy's kind of exciting.
Paramount Pictures and Icon Productions present.
I won't dance.
I'm going to be the one guy on earth who knows what women want, how they think, and why they do those cuckoo things they do.
The story of a man's man who's listening to what women want.
Don't fall for a guy at work. Don't fall for a guy at work.
Why?
Why what?
And getting in touch with his feminine side.
Dad!
Hi!
What are you doing?
Exfoliating.
I'm a bitch!
Mel Gibson. You go, girl. Helen Hunt.
I'm free. Just call me anytime.
I'm flirting. What's wrong with me?
Oh, God, I just looked at his crotch. Oh, I hope he didn't see me. Oh, I just looked at it again. Stop it.
What Women Want, a Nancy Meyers film.
I can't believe this is what I'll be wearing the last night I'm a virgin.
There we have it, What Women Want. It was released December 15th, 2000, right around the new millennium. It was a big movie for Paramount Pictures. On a budget of $70 million, Its opening weekend, it was number one, making 33. Domestic total, 182. Overseas, it made even more, 191. Grand total, $374 million for this little, small, romantic comedy starring Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt.
Not bad. And as you mentioned, in this time frame, he was rolling along. And it's interesting because he had made a bunch of diverse movies. We know him. You and I go round and round, and we've seen that all the time. Wouldn't we say that he's known best for the Lethal Weapon series? Or maybe you disagree with that on Mel Gibson.
Well, there's two, because there's also Mad Max and The Road Warrior. You know, The Road Warrior was the Mad Max sequel. I mean, Mad Max was what kind of introduced him to us. So he's known to audiences for Mad Max and for his character Martin Riggs on Lethal Weapon. But he's had so many big hits. He was in Bird on a Wire with Goldie Hawn. He was in Air America with Robert Downey Jr. Don't forget Conspiracy Theory with Julia Roberts. Right. Then there was Ransom, where they were looking for his missing son, Gary Sinise. Maverick, the remake of the old TV show.
You're
going to
get to the one.
James Garner.
You're going to get to the one, though, that I think a lot of people will know. You're almost there. Keep going.
There's a couple more. I've got a plan here. His highest grossing movie of all time came from M. Night Shyamalan was Signs.
Right.
Probably his most well-received movie of all time was Braveheart.
There you go. I think the argument would be, would you not agree, most known for, I mean, maybe the Mad Max is so long ago, and they were kind of offbeat, different, combat, action, thriller, futuristic movies, post-apocalyptic, whatever you want to, all in one box, jumble it up movies. The Lethal Weapon was more like action comedy, adult action comedy, with a little bit of drama and suspense. But Braveheart, of course, appealed to everybody. It was William Wallace there in Braveheart. Is he more known for Braveheart than Lethal Weapon, Mel Gibson?
I don't think so.
No.
Known for both. He was a huge, huge star.
Braveheart bigger than Mad Max, do you think? More would know him from Braveheart than Mad Max?
Probably. It was a bigger movie, and, it was in 95 as opposed to the early 80s. But I think a lot of people, when you think of Mel Gibson, that the Road Warrior and Mad Max certainly come into play.
And what's also interesting is post this movie and all those ones that you were listing, he kind of disappeared for a while, made a comeback not long after this movie as the producer-director of The Passion of the Christ, has made some movies here and there, but nothing like what was rolling along in the 90s, which is oftentimes our point when we bring up these stars.
Yeah, we're not going to get into it on the show, but he had kind of little meltdowns along the way that kind of hurt him with the public.
Little?
So, yeah, tiny, minute things that, but yeah, he certainly came across as not the person.
He went over the cliff like Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis and Thelma and Louise, and still actually recovered and is back making movies again. So that's a remarkable recovery by Mel.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like he did the Peter Pan and The Fugitive, and then reemerged later on.
Very nice.
Very nice. That's kind of how that turned out. But yeah, he certainly didn't do himself any favors. But box office wise, if we do worldwide unadjusted, this What Women Want is his second biggest movie of all time behind Signs. It made more than all the Lethal Weapons, Braveheart, all these other ones we just talked about. That's how big a deal this movie was. If we go to just domestic, just in America, it is number four on the adjusted ticket price. We have Signs, Lethal Weapon 2, Lethal Weapon 3, and then What Women Want bested Ransom and Lethal Weapon 4.
How about that?
So big time movie we're talking about here. Now, do you have a favorite Mel Gibson movie? We're talking about what he's known for. What do you
I have an underrated one that I will watch all the time. I have to admit that I don't think I ever saw What Women Want in the theater. I have seen it a couple of times, including watching it for this show, but I've seen it a couple of times with my wife. We're coming up on 23 years of marriage. I remember watching it before because it's in and around the time period of like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days and The Wedding Planner, My Best Friend's Wedding, all these movies, 90s, 2000s. In and around that time, I remember seeing them with my wife at some point, whether it was Blockbuster DVD or starting to get on the internet and on demand and that kind of thing. But I love the movie Payback. I gravitate to that one. That he made that one right before this one, right? Where he's the henchman, if you will, or he's a robber initially. They go and commit robberies. He ends up getting double crossed by his partner and almost killed, and then makes a comeback and wants to pay back everybody that double crossed him and try to get his money back.
Isn't it like he just wants $70,000 or something like
right,
that?
And exactly.
Can't figure out why he's doing all
and
this.
It's got Kris Kristofferson and James Coburn at the top of it, of the syndicate that are trying to stop him. And it's got some comedic parts, but it's an action drama kind of movie right out of Mel's role. My point is, that's not as famous, that's not as well known as the Lethal Weapons, it's not Braveheart, it's not even Mad Max, or this one that had so much box office success as well. It's an underrated Mel Gibson that I would go to for Payback, right before he did this one, and it shows the diversity of him in certain roles.
Right, he went from Payback, and the year 2000 was a typical Mel Gibson year. In the summer, he had The Patriot, which made $113
million. Fantastic. Are you a fan of that?
Okay, What Women Want.
I glossed over that one. Fantastic movie, The Patriot. My wife cries at that still to this day with what ends up happening to, spoiler alert, Heath Ledger at the end of it. What about you and The Patriot?
The late, great Heath Ledger. I did like that movie. In fact, I remember seeing that one in the theater, and I thought that was just a great experience to see on the big screen. It's probably kind of like Braveheart Light, if you will, from that end, but I enjoyed that one. I would say Mel Gibson-wise, other than his humongous hits that we all know, I really enjoy the 88 movie To Kill Sunrise.
Yes.
He was with Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, where he and Kurt Russell were childhood friends who now Mel Gibson, you know, fast forward to today, he's a drug dealer or trying to retire because he's got a young son. He doesn't want him to grow up to be a drug dealer. And we have Kurt Russell, who is the police officer who is basically in charge of narcotics of that area. And the funny part is, the way the movie portrays it, Mel Gibson is really more the good guy, and Kurt Russell's kind of the shady, slimy bad guy. And you've got Michelle Pfeiffer in the middle, who they both like, and Robert Towne made it, the well-known writer. He directed that. And it's a really, really entertaining movie, and it's got a couple twists in it. And if you haven't seen that one,
yes,
I can't guarantee we'll do that one on the show, but I might have to twist your arm. Maybe I'll do one of the ones you want in return for that one.
You might torture me, as it turns out, like Porter is torturing people in Payback. Maria Bello also in Payback. It's underrated. When you ask me about favorite ones, I might go to that one. I might go off the beaten path on this one. But he definitely shows some differences in some of his different roles, including in this one. All right, who else in the cast? I didn't mean to sidetrack
Helen
your cast.
Hunt. Yeah. Helen Hunt has a major part, Darcy McGuire, and the reason her part is major is we mentioned in the opening that Mel Gibson's character's pretty cocky, and he's expecting this promotion. And he shows up to work and finds out he gets called into the boss's office, finds out he is not getting it. You're actually hiring a woman, Darcy McGuire, played by Helen Hunt.
Yes.
You a Helen Hunt fan?
I am. I do have to confess. Okay, so Twister, yes. Mad About You, I would watch. That was the TV sitcom with Paul Reiser, some here and there. But what else on Helen Hunt? Including, I go way back with Helen Hunt, but what else of note in and around and after this time?
As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson. Jack
right.
Nicholson, she was in that. You may recall that one. Jack Nicholson won an Academy Award for it.
Yes, and have seen that one. And what is it? Greg Kinnear also in that one, when Greg Kinnear was a big deal as a comedian, and then was transitioning as an actor, I believe, there too. And she made those in and around. How long was Mad About You on the air on NBC as the adult sitcom that was rolling along? Wasn't it at least 5 years? It may have had like a 7 or 8 year run, and it's been in syndication in some places too. So she was very well known in and around this time period for that TV show.
Correct. And I was going to say she also won an Oscar for As Good As It Gets.
How
so we know her from that. That was her big role. She was on Mad About You with Paul Reiser. I'm not sure. Wasn't that one of the Thursday night NBC shows?
Something
in
like
Seinfeld
that.
Seinfeld Friends days?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that we've also got, you mentioned Twister. She was in Castaway with Tom Hanks.
Yes.
She was the wife that he went back to. Remember that?
Right. In terms of As Good As It Gets, she did win for Best Actress in that one.
Correct.
She's also been nominated as a Best Supporting Actress. How about this? For Mad About You, as a Golden Globe actress, she had 3 wins as playing her character. I can't even remember the character's name. Playing the same character. She got nominated actually 5 years in a row for a Golden Globe for Mad About You, and won twice, actually 3 times. She got nominated 5 times and won 3 times. So she was very prominent, obviously, and won a bunch of primetime Emmys as well for Mad About You for the run that it had. How about that?
Well, and yeah, no, she did great. And that show is actually on right now. It's on Starz Encore. It comes on in the afternoons. So if you want to catch up on it, or you have Starz, so you can watch it on demand if you want to catch up on that. One of your all-time favorite shows, which has been mentioned many times on our show, She was on Saint Elsewhere.
There
she had
we
her
go.
Current character playing Clancy Williams in
she
the 86
season. Clancy for one season. I'm clapping for you because a lot of times we come back to Saint Elsewhere, the doctor's drama, again on NBC. I was a big fan of that in the 80s. And so, yes, I do remember her as Clancy, a very young Helen Hunt. If you ever go search for that on the internet on St. Elsewhere, if you can find any clips of that season she was on, she almost looked like a teenager in those years, Helen Hunt, during those filmings of that show as a recurring character. She's one of the doctor's love interests in that she wasn't
well,
an
I want to mention one,
show.
Too. There's one thing I remember her from was a TV movie when I was a kid called The Quarterback Princess.
Yes.
Where she played
yes.
the quarterback on the high school team. And it had a lot of people in it you would recognize, like John Stockwell, that we know he was Cougar in Top Gun. Don Murray was in it. And, you know, several others that you would recognize them and the character actors. And I want to say a young Tim Robbins was even in that.
So. May very well have been. Okay, so Mad About You, I just looked, was 8 seasons, 92 through 99. And I remember the quarterback Princess movie, and I'm trying to see the year on that one would have been like in the late '80s, right before that.
No, early 80s, like 83, 84. It was
right before,
it was a long time ago.
So it was right before she would have been on St. Elsewhere. Quarterback Princess, 1983. So very good. So yeah, Helen Hunt, been around a while. Still looking good, especially in this movie. All right, continue, my friend.
We also have, in What Women Want, we have Marissa Tomei,
mm-hmm.
the Academy Award-winning Marissa Tomei from My Cousin Vinny. She plays Lola. And this is one of the ones, it's kind of one of the deals where you look back at this movie in 2000, you know, this is one of those things where he consistently beats her down, asks her out every day. And today with the Me Too movement, this would be harassment.
Of
but back
course.
Then it was flattering because
right.
she was, you know, especially once he heard her thoughts, he realized that she was lonely and she was upset because she was struggling to get parts as an actress working at a coffee shop. And so he realized that her no really meant yes, where in, you know, fast forward to 2019, no means no. So that's a part that had they remade this as What Women Want instead of What Men Want, that part probably would have been altered a little bit. Are you a Marissa Tomei fan?
Yes. Mona Lisa Vito, right? From
correct.
My Cousin Vinny with the expert on the cars and ends up helping get the defendants off with Joe Pesci and the whole thing, the New Yorkers that come to the South. So, yes, in many different things that she's been in. And I did not remember until we decided to do this one here in and around Valentine's Day, her role as Lola. But, you know, clearly here, this is not unlike how a lot of relationships go, especially, you know, where it's a good looking leading man, the stereotypical thing. And there are lots of women that are interested in him. And she's obviously at the coffee shop. She's interested in him. And eventually in this movie, they're going to hook up. But unfortunately, like you mentioned earlier, Mel Gibson's Nick Marshall, doesn't have a lot of use for women in a lot of ways, although he's going to have to learn because it's part of his job and that's part of the movie. He's going to have to kind of learn what women want. But yeah, she's there.
Yeah, there's a part when he's hitting on her in the coffee shop and she keeps trying to go next to get him all the way.
Right.
And he keeps talking to her and eventually breaks her down to saying, "How about we meet here tomorrow?" And the guy behind him in line says, "Sir, if you don't mind saying, that was inspirational." And Mel Gibson does his little nod, "I know." And that kind of tells you all you need to know about Nick's character. But Marissa Tomei's had a couple other big movies. She was in Wild Hogs. Remember that one? She was in The Lincoln Lawyer with Matthew McConaughey.
Yes.
You know, she's been in and around a bunch of things. There was one thing I heard. I don't know. Like I said, this is just something I heard over time. I don't have it in front of me or anything. But I heard they were looking at making a sequel to My Cousin Vinny, but that her salary demands were too high. So that's why they ended up
shocking.
Not having it.
Shocking. So what was the one with Christian Slater that was
Untamed Heart?
There you go, where their love interest, and shall we go ahead and do the spoiler alert from 1993? He ends up dying in the movie. And so I still remember tears from Mrs. Reeves on that one, and I'm having to dry the tears. Again, it's a chick flick. And of course, she was big as the exotic dancer, stripper, whatever, in The Wrestler.
The Wrestler.
The big comeback from Mickey Rourke in the late 2000s.
Did you like that movie?
I did very much because I'm into professional wrestling, but I was very much into that performance, very realistic performance of what happened, what happens, and what happened to a lot of professional wrestlers. In the 80s, the 90s, whatever, when they got older, you don't have your health, you don't have your money, you have only really like little bits and pieces of your fame or of your money or of whatever. And she is tremendous in it because she is also trying to be his conscience in this, that he doesn't need to go back and be a wrestler. The only thing that he knows how to do, that he could end up killing himself. So I really liked her in that movie.
I thought it was really well made. I was surprised. I didn't know if I was going to like it. It's not really my kind of movie. It's dark and depressing. And usually I like movies like Lethal Weapon or What Women Want that are kind of right. blockbuster type, you know, popcorn movies. But I enjoyed it. So moving on, we have playing the boss, Dan. We have Alan Alda.
There we go. Famous for MASH. Famous in a lot of other different movies and shows along the way.
There's one I want to mention of his that was back. I want to say it was in the 80s. And it had him and Michael Caine. It was called Sweet Liberty. Did you ever see that?
Did not see that one.
Can't he had a little run. He had one called A New Life where he was with Anne Margaret. They were married and they'd split up. And then he had done the Woody Allen movie, Crimes and Misdemeanors. Sweet Liberty was right around the time. Betsy's Wedding with Molly Ringwald and Joe Pesci and many others. I mean, he had a kind of a good little run where he had a lot of theatrical movies there. But yeah, for sure. More recently, he played Jordan in Murder 1600. With yes. Wesley Snipes, where he was well, you always say spoiler alert. He was the bad guy.
He ended up being the bad guy. He was excellent as a bad guy in another movie. And I'm just looking real quick here while we're talking on what that movie was. It had a twist. It was a psychological thriller on who ended up essentially, I guess, murdering one of the patients, one of the clients. And I'm looking for the name of that one, but he ends up in a twist being the bad guy there. Because you're so used to seeing him be the funny good guy on MASH that when you suddenly start seeing him in different roles, then, yeah, I mean, it's different to see Alan Alda many years later. And, of course, we also know him, another favorite of mine. He played the Republican nominee at the very end of the West Wing series.
Favorite of ours.
Favorite of both. Well, I mean, have you still caught up to the final seasons? You've joked with me before that you watched like the first couple of years.
I stopped watching after season four when Aaron Sorkin and Rob Lowe left.
I understand. So he came back around, though, as part of the West Wing at the very end of the show. And ended up being the Republican nominee that's trying to get elected. And in the end, Jimmy Smits, as Representative Santos from Texas, ends up winning the election. A controversial election. Doesn't it seem like all of our elections are controversial?
Sure. It seems that way. And like in modern times, he was also on Tower Heist. Remember the Eddie Murphy, Ben Stiller right? movie where he was the guy that lived at the top of the tower condos that took everybody that worked there, took their money and basically used it for his own lifestyle instead of investing it.
Okay. So, yeah, so that was in and around about the same time, Tower Heist, in and around the same time that he was on the West Wing. He played Arnie Vennick, and he was nominated a couple of different times for Primetime Emmy Awards in and around that, on that one. And so then the movie that I was looking for the name I thought I had it there a second ago. Whispers in the Dark is that one where you're trying to find out who ends up killing the patient, the woman in this, and it's a big mystery around who did it. And it turns out, I'm spoiling it, that Alan Alda did it. So diverse, and he's the boss here in this one. In What Women Want.
Gotcha. And Tower Heist was actually 5 years after West Wing. It was in 2011.
All right, there we go.
It was kind of Eddie Murphy's comeback, if you will, to being an Eddie Murphy character, not in all these kids movies he's done, and Ben Stiller. And Alan Alda's character was kind of like a Bernie Madoff. He was a total scumbag and he took all the people's money. And then lastly, probably his most recent big things, he was in Bridge of Spies with Tom Hanks, and then he's also had a couple of guest starring roles on the Showtime series Ray Donovan.
I haven't gotten as much into that one. I've only seen like an episode here and there on that. And he's also done some theater acting too, in the 2000s, was part of the Broadway Glengarry Glen Ross and some other ones. So long career. He's best known, we agree, for playing Hawkeye on MASH. Hawkeye Pierce, Alan Alda, for all those years on what is arguably the most successful sitcom in American television history. Still holds the highest rating ever for any television single show, any comedy television single show, as their farewell episode of MASH had like over 60 million people, something like that, watching back in the early 1980s when they said goodbye on that show. Phenomenal.
Now, remind me, was that bigger than Who Shot J.R.?
Yes.
That's a little before my time. Okay.
Yes. Well, Who Shot J.R. was massive, but I mean, put it this way. Right now, the shows that rule television are NFL football games, including the Super Bowl. In fact, the last, I believe it is, 10 highest rated television shows our Super Bowl broadcast. At the time that we're taping is the most recent Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Rams, and that one was watched by 105 million people. The only show, Jay Betzel, that competes with any of those was the 80 million or so, or whatever the number ended up being on the final episode of MASH. It got over a 40-40 television rating when they said goodbye to MASH in the early 1980s, and Alan Alda was part of that. How about that?
And that was on Monday nights, is that correct?
I think. I'm trying to remember what night that it came on, but it was a staple. So they owned Sunday night for 60 minutes and Hawaii 5-0 on CBS, and it may very well have been a Monday night show that they had MASH on as well.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I remember Pat Summerall's Murder, She Wrote, Crazy Like a Fox, and Trapper John M.D. So that's kind of my first recollection of any TV. And I don't really watch any of them. I just remember him saying that.
Remember now, this is also an era where there were only three TV networks, too. And that's another reason why MASH was so massively popular and made Alan Alda such a big star, was because you only had, at that time, ABC, NBC, CBS competing with each other. And you latched onto these shows and they went forever. Like MASH was on, I think, for 29 years. I think we fought the Korean War for like 8 decades or something. Anyway, I digress. The rest on the cast, sir.
Yeah, let's hit a couple more in the cast real quick before we move to the movie. We had playing Morgan, his friend, Mark Feuerstein. You know who that is? He played Cliff on The West Wing.
Yes, and he ended up having his own show, what was it, Royal Pains or something, where he's like the doctor up in the Hamptons or something, and that lasted like a season or two. And he's been in a couple
Correct.
Of other
Good Morning Miami he was on. Obviously, yeah. He played Cliff Callie on The West Wing. So he's someone you certainly recognize. He's been in a lot of stuff. Good character actor. We have playing Gigi, who's not in the movie that much. She's at the beginning and then a little towards the middle. But that is Mel Gibson's ex-wife, who's getting married to start the movie. She's played by Lauren Holly.
Yes. And we know her in several different roles because we already recently did Alien Given Sunday. She's the wife of Dennis Quaid of Cap Rooney in that one. But what else?
The thing I think of with her really is Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber.
She was with Jim Carrey. You know, they were together before. And she played Mary in, you know, Mary Swanson. You know, Samsonite Swanson was Swinson right. Swanson. So she was Mary.
She recently
lived in Aspen.
And in the 2000s, she was on NCIS, right, as a recurring character. I go all the way back with Lauren Holly, too. What was it? Andrew Dice Clay, right? Ford Fairlane, the Rock and Roll.
The Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
Rock and Roll Detective. So, yes, Lauren
right.
Holly. But she's only in this a little bit, though, as the ex-wife who's getting remarried.
Yeah, she's got a major part. She's just on her honeymoon. That's how the daughter ends up staying with Mel Gibson. A couple other roles she had were good. Beautiful Girls, which has Matt Dillon, Uma Thurman, Timothy Hutton. Great movie from the mid-90s. She plays Darian. She was in Sabrina with Harrison Ford and Greg Kinnear.
Yep.
So she's been in a lot of stuff, but you know, she had a couple starring roles back there in the mid-90s, so a lot of people were very familiar with who she was from that. We also have playing Annie, who is essentially Mel Gibson's assistant, the great Sarah Paulson.
Yes. So we get introduced to her and seen her in many different things, including most recently playing Marcia Clark, right, in the Fox series about the O.J. Simpson trials, where they did the little recurring miniseries of about 8 or 10 episodes.
Correct. The People versus O.J. Simpson. She was in that. Most recently, she was in Ocean's 8.
Yes.
You know, kind of the continuation of the Ocean's 11 series, the one that had Sandra Bullock and Rihanna and Cate Blanchett, a few others. She was also in that.
Very nice.
And Hathaway was also in that. She was in 12 Years a Slave. You know, lots of big movies for her. She's just a really good actress. And you know, we talk about our love for Aaron Sorkin. She was Harriet on Studio 60 and Sunset Strip.
I love
that show
that had Bradley Whitford,
Matthew Perry,
and had Matthew Perry
Amanda
and
Pete.
Had Timothy Busfield on it. Had Amanda Peet on it. Ill-fated, though. It only lasted, I think, the one season. And I want to say they canceled it after like 4 episodes that it was lagging. And then they brought it back like in the summer and showed like the next 6 or something they had shot. And that's it. It was not on
yeah,
for
you,
more
you
than
get
like
the DVD.
10,
I've
12.
I've seen all of them. I got the DVD one time. In fact, I was at Half Price Books looking for something I actually needed and ended up seeing that and dropping $20 on it. But it was so worth
wait,
it. Cause
are you saying that if I need to watch them, you can send it to me? You can drop it in the mail and send it to me? Because I don't know that you're going to hang on to ever, forever and ever for the Studio 60 comedy show that lasted one season. But you have it.
I could probably be persuaded to do
it. If
that.
I need it, you have it. It's a go-to thing for Sarah Paulson and for what, I mean, Aaron Sorkin was trying and Matthew Perry was trying. Like, post-Friends, he was trying, like, numerous different sitcoms or series or adult dramas or whatever to try to work out. That was one that just didn't last very long.
When it kind of reminds me more of, like, you know, this is kind of the Saturday Night Live version of, like, The Newsroom and Sports Night. I mean, I just really enjoyed watching. I was disappointed that it didn't last, but it's probably had quite the budget when you look at the names and everybody involved in it. And I believe I could be wrong. Somebody can correct me if they want, but I believe it was on against CSI Miami, which was a juggernaut back then. So I don't think much would have chance there.
Speaking of like what you're up against, like if something was up against the NBC must see TV lineup on Thursday nights back in the 80s and the 90s, you had no hope. You might as well, you know, have just taking your marbles and gone home if that was the case. But the interesting thing about Sarah Paulson on that show, I don't want to totally digress, is it was a complete departure from her real life. The character that she was playing was a Baptist religious, and again, I am Baptist, I am religious, a Baptist religious right-wing conservative character on the show, and it's the exact opposite of her personal life. So her character on her show was going against everything in her real life. Because this is well known, she's out, she's a lesbian, she's been married previously and adopted kids, and at the time in the 90s and the 2000s, gay marriage, gay adoption was a big deal. So she's playing a character on TV, in part for her career and trying to advance, that is the exact opposite of who she is in real life, which was interesting in terms of acting.
I just think she's a great actress. I thought her part in O.J. Simpson playing Marcia Clark, because I remember well, you know, when I was in school coming home and the OJ trial being on CNN all day, the gavel to gavel coverage they had.
No doubt.
So I remember Marcia Clark really well. And I thought she just did a great job. And, you know, that was a really fun show. I believe it's on Netflix if you hadn't seen it, with John Travolta playing Robert Shapiro. My all time favorite actor, Cheryl Ladd, is in it. You've got Cuba Gooding Jr. playing OJ.
Oh, Cuba Gooding Jr. and OJ. Isn't Nathan Lane, F. Lee Bailey in this too? So, I mean, you guys.
Yes. And Courtney. Courtney B. Vance playing Johnny Cochran, him and Sarah Paulson, they did great jobs. I mean, you know, it's like I felt like I was watching Johnny Cochran, and I remember telling a friend of mine at work while we were watching it live when it was actually on Wednesday nights on FX, and I said something to him about Johnny Cochran passing away, and he's like, Johnny Cochran's dead? And I'm like, yeah,
that's an actor.
But I see a picture of Johnny Cochran, and I'm like, wait a minute, Courtney B. Vance looks more like Johnny Cochran than the picture.
Johnny Cochran does. Exactly. Exactly. But she was dead on as Marcia Clark in this too. While we spend a few more minutes on,
did a great job,
especially the perm, wearing the female perm. I mean, that she had to do that every day, because the thing is, in this movie and in most of the things she's in, she's got the long straight blonde hair that we know her for. But she had the Marcia Clark perm down for the.
Well,
the
remember that was an open and shut case in the DA's office blew that. You know, whether it was Gil Garcetti or Chris Darden or Marcia Clark, whoever you want to blame, they grandstanded it and let the cameras in. You know, I guess Lance Ito probably had something to do with the cameras being in, but either way, that was one of those that just could have been handled so differently. But you know, it turned out how it did.
It did. By the way, one more just to prove the diversity here. If you go back and watch The West Wing, where Alda is playing Arnie Vinnick, again, same thing. Politics aside, we're not taking sides here, but Alan Alda is a well-known, almost off-the-charts liberal environmentalist, Hollywood elitist, whatever you want to call it, throughout his career, been an activist for liberal causes, political and otherwise. The character on The West Wing is the exact opposite. He's playing the arch conservative against gay marriage. Here we go again, against abortion, against everything, arch conservative political character. So it's just fascinating when actors, I'm just pointing out, go the complete opposite route and have to play someone that in their real life they absolutely are not. And Sarah Paulson did that previously, and so did Alan Alda. So there you go.
Well, the way that some things turned out with Mel Gibson, it sounds like he was a little more like his character, Nick Marshall, than we realized. So let's dive into our movie, since we're about 30 minutes into the show. We hadn't really talked about it yet. It basically starts out with Lauren Holly and talking to her bridesmaids and stuff, describing her ex-husband, Nick. And you find out why he is how he is, because he grew up the son of a Las Vegas showgirl,
right,
and was always around these hot, beautiful women. And the only male role models he had were the scumbags that his mom would bring home. You know, and they'd sit there and teach him how to gamble and stuff like that. So
be a degenerate.
The reason he turned into this alpha male basically was his upbringing. And so fast forward to today, he's an advertising executive at Sloan Curtis in Chicago. He's obviously pretty big time because he's up for promotion of creative director, which would basically put him in charge of all of the ad campaigns of this really elite agency. And you get the drift that kind of his specialty is like the sweetest bikini model team and some of those beer and tobacco and car ads and stuff like that. Stuff that, you know, like you think of beer commercials, how a lot of people think real life is like that sometimes. That's kind of what his real life was like, you know, and you get to meet him and see how he is when he's going into work. Of course, he shows up late because he does what he wants. Shows up late the day he thinks he's getting promoted, only to find out that his boss, played by Alan Alda, says that the world is changing, that girls that are 16 to 24 control a lot of the advertising dollars, and the days of beer commercials and sweet bikini team stuff is not working. So he's brought in some help, and he hired Darcy McGuire from a cross-town firm.
To find out what women really want. We gotta find out what they really want, right?
Yes, to get into the minds of the women and appeal to the advertisers that are trying to appeal to women. And so, of course, he's completely bummed because he thought he was going to be getting this job. He's kind of walking around just like, you know, I can't believe that just happened. Turns out he's going to get to meet Darcy the next day. And she comes in and basically introduces herself as like a little board meeting kind of thing. And she has all these female products because she said the women's advertising the year before was in the billions and not 1% of that was from this agency. So she says, we're going to go after that and try and bring this agency back to where it was. And so she gives everyone in the room, there's probably 20 or 30 people at the standing room only around this boardroom table, gives all of them these feminine products to try out and not necessarily try on, but to kind of familiarize themselves with them. And then they get to be there the next morning at 8:30, which is way earlier than he would like to come in to discuss them. So that night he gets home. He actually stops by the wedding, sees his wife, finds out, he's going to have his daughter for 2 weeks. So and finds out that his daughter has a boyfriend, an older 18-year-old, his 15-year-old daughter, Alex, has an 18-year-old boyfriend named Cameron. And so he goes home to work on these feminine products, and he's watching TV. He's watching The Hunt for Red October. He sees where he's doing a really good Sean Connery impersonation, his adversary. And then he's also watching an old school NBA game. There,
right, of
he
course.
He flips to a channel where there's like gymnastics on, and he just rolls his eyes. You know, I might watch women's gymnastics. And then he goes to try on these products. In the meantime, his daughter comes in with her boyfriend, sees him with, lip gloss and and pantyhose and all kinds of,
this part of the movie, if I can interject, this is self-preservation here. He realizes he didn't get the promotion. He realizes that if he doesn't get with the program here, that he may be out of the job. That's why he's taking these measures here to try to figure this out, because this is what the new boss wants. Exactly.
Exactly. In a way, he's doing that so that he doesn't look like a complete idiot when he goes to work the next day. But at the same time, he's kind of depressed and kind of bummed that he didn't get this job. So he's not really thinking straight. And he ends up, he's got these.
He's also drinking. He's also drinking, so alcohol's involved.
He's had a couple of shots, and he's listening to his daughter's CD, which is, the I'm a Bitch song. So he's in there singing that while he's dressing like a woman. His daughter and boyfriend walk in. He explains to him he's doing product research. His daughter gets mad that he went through his stuff to find the CD. And then he says something about him never listening. And she's like, okay, if you listen, what's my boyfriend's name? And of course, he wasn't listening, so he can't remember it. He's like, Carmine, whatever. And so then he gets kind of a light bulb goes off in his head. He's like, oh, Cameron. And right as he says that, he slips on these on the pearls he dropped, falls into his bathtub, which is full of water, while he's got his hair dryer in his hand, drops the hair dryer in the water and shocks himself. And so most of us would die when that happens, right?
Of course. This is a fantasy. But it's Hollywood. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, this is a fantasy. It's not even pretending to be realistic. He wakes up the next morning on the bathroom floor with his maid coming in, and he can hear his maid's – you can hear what she's saying. He thinks she's talking because she's saying, oh, great, he's a cross-dresser now. There's all kinds of negative things about him, and he's like, aren't you in a mood? She's like, she's not saying anything. She's just thinking these. So, and she's kind of around the corner, so he doesn't know she's not saying it. And the next thing you know, he leaves his apartment building or his condo, and the lady out front, played by Loretta Devine, she's kind of like the door woman.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of making these noises at him, talking about how hot he looks and saying he looks like Shaft.
This is what she's thinking, though,
yeah,
too.
Exactly. Yes. She's thinking it, not saying it.
Right.
And so he's kind of freaking out now because he's like, what in the heck is going on? And then he's like, rather than taking a taxi cab and standing next to this woman who's obviously hee-hawing over him, he says, I think I'll just walk through the park. And as he's walking off, he hears her what she's thinking about him and almost gets hit by a taxi and then makes his way into the park. And every woman walking by, including a French poodle, he can hear everything feminine, what they're thinking. So, and some of them are sad. Some of them are happy. Some of them trying to think if they left the stove on. I mean, you name it, he can hear it all.
And so we've talked about this in the past, and I by no means have a film background or a film degree, but I did take a couple of different classes in college, in and around filmmaking. What has happened in the bathtub with the hairdryer and the water and the products electrocuting him, if you will, is called the inciting incident. It has set the movie into motion that now Mel Gibson can truly begin to find out with insight, once he figures out how to harness it here, what women want, because he can find out what they're thinking. So it's a good Hollywood, okay, here's the crux of the movie. He now can find out, for good or evil, what women actually want and what they're thinking.
Yeah, and first it starts out with him not utilizing it right. If, you know, he's reading their minds, all I can hear is they say, oh, he's got too much aftershave on, or oh, he's not that good looking. One of them looks at him and goes, I hate that you've seen me naked. You know, all the stuff he's hearing basically makes him think everyone hates him. He finds out that his assistant is calling her boyfriend in Israel overseas on the company phone. I mean, you name it, everything he's hearing is bad. So he freaks out and goes to his old shrink, his former shrink that he used for his marriage counseling. And she is played by Bette Midler.
Mm-hmm.
And she points out the obvious of, you could use this to your advantage, you know, because Freud passed away, you know, having one question he never answered: what do women really want? So then he turns it to his advantage and decides he's going to sabotage the new boss and use all of her ideas to take her job. And that's the bit where he starts hanging out with Darcy and basically taking her ideas that she's thinking about before she says them. And it's freaking her out because she's like, I was literally just thinking that. And so he manipulates it into where she thinks they're on the same page, as opposed to, you know, because there's no way, you know, there's no way in heck you could ever think that that's a possibility. Oh, this person's legitimately reading my mind, stealing my ideas. So, you know, moving forward, they end up talking in her office, and he says, what's the one big account you really want? And he had overheard her thinking when he walked in about her saying Nike women's division. So he throws that out. He goes, Nike women's division? She's like, oh, you knew about that? And he's like, I got wind of it. And she's like, oh, I heard no one else knew. And he goes, well, you knew, and you know, we're on the same team now. And so they start talking about, you know, ideas and stuff, and basically go through the motions of her ideas in her head, and he takes them before she, you know, she realized, because she's literally brainstorming and thinking, what could we do? This would be the huge account that could turn the company around and basically make my career and cement me as the person that was right for this job. And, you know, and he essentially takes the ideas from her and goes and turns them in before she does or whatever. And they ended up getting Nike to come hear their pitch. And he does the pitch, you know, where it's a woman jogging on the road by herself, and it's no games, just sports. And it's a really awesome ad. You know, Nike had to play probably
exactly,
pretty handsomely to be featured in this major
product
release from Mel Gibson.
Placement, brother. Product placement. Absolutely.
Exactly. They, and, you know, it's one of those, like, I remember this. I thought it was a really cool ad. I don't remember if it ever actually aired on TV or anything, but it was a really cool ad in the movie. And it works out so well that Mel Gibson, with all the time he spent with Darcy, you know, Nick and Darcy, he just basically falls in love with her. He realizes how beautiful and she is on the outside and on the inside, and that she's everything that he wants before he knew what he wanted. You know, when he treated women like they're a piece of meat instead of a person with feelings. So by the time he's fallen in love with her, it's too late. Dan fires Darcy and ends up promoting Mel Gibson to the job he was originally supposed to have. But because of the way he's listened to women, he's overheard this one girl who wishes she was dead because nobody pays attention to her. You know, he just hears things and realizes these people have feelings. And he even goes and hangs out in the coffee room with all the assistants and listens to them talk about their male problems. Like, you know, he's like, he says, don't call him, make him call you. And the girl turns around. She's like, oh, I have to call him. And he goes, trust me, he will call. You know, he like gives them all the secrets. Like, he's literally turned into this nice guy, you know, that would be exactly a dream guy for a woman, because he's a good looking guy who actually cares about what they feel. And he's nothing like the Nick from the beginning of the movie. In fact, there's a part when he's walking through with Morgan to the Nike pitch meeting where Morgan says, are you officially a woman now? What is going on?
Yes.
With you?
They notice the change. He's completely about what women want, which is the whole idea.
So he tells, yeah, so when he goes in, he finds out that Dan has fired Darcy. He hands him the phone. You need to hire her back, or the board's going to be paying you your severance. And Dan's kind of confused here because he thought that, you know, I made a mistake. Nick should have had this job the whole time. They gave Darcy a severance. You know, she had bought this brand new beautiful condo that she'd shown Mel Gibson. Now she's going to have to sell it because she didn't have a job. And basically, Mel Gibson goes to bat for her, gets her job back. you know. And in the meantime, he's also become more close with his daughter because he's heard what she thought about him and what a scumbag she thought he was. So he took her shopping for a prom dress. And,
right.
You know, in the meantime, her 18-year-old boyfriend really was just trying to have sex with her. Like, her 18-year-old boyfriend was what Nick used to be. You know, he was just trying to hook up with her. He didn't care about her. So he ends up going to the prom to try and you know, save her because the guy left her hanging, basically. And so she's sitting there in the prom by herself.
Well, I have to say this now that I've recently seen the movie again with Ashley Johnson playing Alex, playing the daughter. And we've talked about this on the show. I have 10-year-old daughters. My Lord, they're going to be 11 before I know it later this year at the time we're talking. So the relationship with your daughter, and in this case, with both of mine, you have to navigate it carefully. You have to understand their feelings, take the time, take the attention. And clearly, Nick, Mel Gibson's character, has done none of this with his daughter. But all of a sudden, in this little two-week time frame here.
Let me interrupt you real quick. There's a part at the beginning when she says, let me tell you about my dad. He's always been kind of like an uncle to me. Uncle Dad.
Well, right. And so
that's how she describes him. She has no relationship with him.
She doesn't have any. But in this two-week epiphany, if you will, where he almost got electrocuted and he can now figure out what women are thinking and what they really want, he realizes, I have been an awful dad and I need to take interest here and pay attention and be there for my daughter. So that's got women cheering for Mel Gibson even more in this movie. Besides being the good looking hunk and a good actor, he's now trying to be a good dad legitimately.
Well, absolutely. And you and as I mentioned, he had overheard Aaron, who's kind of like one of the messenger girls. That's how long ago this movie was made. We didn't have a lot of emails and cell phones and all that. And people smoked indoors in the offices and everything. I mean, it's like you watch this and it's beautifully filmed. You know, it's got a glossiness to it like it could come out today. The fashion's not too far off, you know, for the most part. But, you know, like I said, there's a couple things like there's no cell phones or very few cell phones, certainly not any smartphones, you know, and all the stuff that goes with that. Anyway, so there's a messenger, Aaron, and he overhears her talking about how she wished she could die. Nobody cares anything about her. It even comes out that she had tried to put in for a copy editor job, and he told his secretary to blow her off because he didn't care anything about her. And so when he thinks that she's contemplating suicide, one of the things she says is, one of these days I just won't show up and people are going to wonder, where's that geeky girl with the glasses who gives everybody the letters? And so he comes in one day and he overhears that she's not there. You know, so
and
this
he's
is
concerned.
Actually this is right. the day that he right. found out Darcy got fired. So he's already feeling, you know, kind of empathetic or whatever. So he's concerned enough. He finds out where she lives, goes to try and find her to check on her. On the way over, it's raining and lightning and everything. He's standing in a puddle and he gets struck by lightning. And so most of us that would kill, it actually, basically, he's had this power long enough that he's turned into a nice guy. It kind of takes the power away from him.
It reverses the process.
Yeah,
it shocks the process out of him again. Yes.
Yeah, he goes into Aaron's place or a little apartment over and walks in, and she starts, you know, freaking out, of course, because the guy walks in and she says, I'm sorry, I was going to call in sick. I just hadn't done it yet. And he says something about, I wonder if you're thinking why I'm here right now. She's like, that's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm wondering why you're here in my apartment. And it freaks him out because he can't hear her thoughts. And he's like, oh, my God. And he said, well, I'd like to talk to you. I remember you put in for this job. And she said, yeah, no one ever said anything. And he said, well, I'm here now and I'm available. I'd love to talk to you about it. So next time you're at work, you know, you come talk to me and we'll make this happen. And following that, he goes to Darcy's house to let Darcy know that, hey, I'm your knight in shining armor. I saved your job for you. And in the meantime, he basically comes clean and says,
he
hey,
confesses.
I sabotaged you.
Right.
Yeah,
he confesses.
I sabotaged you. You know, I love you. I took all your ideas. I'm so sorry, this and that. She goes, so I really do have my job back. And he's like, yeah. And she's like, okay, then you're fired. He's like, well, I didn't really see that as an outcome, but I guess it's probably, you know, you're well within your rights and all. And so he's going to leave. You know, he's thinking, I can't really even argue
here
that
comes
because
Hollywood.
I legitimately said everything.
And here comes the Hollywood ending. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so she, you know, so Helen Hunt's character, Darcy, kind of walks over to the end, and she's like, that's just it? You're going to walk away? You know, and it kind of goes back to, you know, earlier in the movie they mentioned this. She's like, newsflash, I took the wrong road. She's like, what kind of knight in shining armor would I be if I let the man I love, let a little small thing like me firing you get in the way of us being together kind of thing? And
right.
So, you know, then it does a straight Hollywood ending. You know, the director's Nancy Meyers. She's done a lot of movies that are similar to this, you know, this kind of tone. You know, she's written and directed some. The Father of the Bride movie, Baby Boom. Even more recently, like The Intern was hers, the one with Robert De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way things are in her movies is they're so fun and everything always, you know, wraps up nice and neat. And that's how this is. They have the Temptations music playing.
Mm-hmm.
They're standing here in this essentially empty condo and they're, you know, they're going to live happily ever after. And that's It's a fun, it's a Valentine's movie. Like I said, there's certainly some of the things that he does back then that would not fly in today's society.
Of course.
There's a, like I mentioned a little while ago, the fact that he's always, it's kind of weird now thinking back, you know, like to Basic Instinct that we did a few weeks ago, or this one, how all the characters smoke and everything. Like
Exactly.
The movies these days, hardly anyone ever smokes, but it's a lot of things that we just kind of take for granted now.
Well, yeah, but you,
you
know,
go
back
to
a
restaurant or you go to a bar, there's no smoking here in Fort Worth.
Exactly.
Dallas,
it's all clean.
So it's just, yeah.
But if you go back and watch Lethal Weapon as Riggs, he's smoking all the time in every one of those movies, constantly. So
he's trying to quit, remember?
Right, exactly.
That's kind of a bit.
With the gum and the whole, yeah. So it's Hollywooded up, as I like to say, on these editions of We've Seen That, and it's a Hollywood ending. It's a love story ending where he's going to get with the girl anyway, and he's got the relationship mended with his daughter, and he's been much better to the office people, the coworkers, and all the people that he's around, so... Yes, it ends up working out in that way. You know, I was thinking, too, when you were coming to the close of this, I left out another quote-unquote chick flick seeing with my wife in the 90s, and it's on all the time now on cable, is You've Got Mail, where Tom Hanks, at least for business purposes, is kind of the same awful, chauvinistic guy. He's putting the other businesses, the other book businesses
Fox
out of business.
Fox & Sons Books, wasn't it?
Right, Joe Fox, right, F-O-X. He's putting everybody out of business. And so in this case, similarly, it's not reading her actual mind, but it's anonymously online, knowing who she is, Kathleen Kennedy, right? Or Kathleen Kelly, I think it is. He knows what she's thinking, what she wants to do. He's giving her relationship help anonymously online through America Online, which we all used to have, and chats and instant messaging and that kind of stuff. So it's similar in that way, that he has insight into Meg Ryan's character and what she's thinking and what she wants to do, and it ends up being a happily ever after love story at the end, because the same thing could have happened where she sees Joe Fox at the very end and realizes that's who I've been confiding in, that's who I've been talking to, that's who I've been desiring to be somebody that I could, you know, learn more about or have a relationship with. And it turns out it's somebody that I don't want anything to do with. And so it could have ended totally differently, but it's a Hollywood, it's a love story, and it ends great. Same thing
well,
with
thing,
this
I was
one.
Say,
it ends as
yeah,
a love story.
Say,
yeah.
It's for both of them. For both You've Got Mail and What Women Want, is their romance is kind of, it's like based on like a foundation of lies. You know, over and over, like everything is all fake.
Right.
You know, and so how do you know you're really in love with this person? Because
yeah,
you're pretending
but, okay,
to be someone else or
this,
whatever. So
this is where I give you some insight. You have a little, but I give you a lot more because of the world that I've been in. When you're dealing with advertising and advertisers, what do they primarily do? They primarily lie about their products, about their client base. You almost have to become a person where it is second nature to bend or fracture or the truth or just outright make things up and lie. It's part of the sell. It's part of the client. I mean, I still think back to the Showtime series that Don Cheadle did earlier in this century. It's still weird to say that earlier, actually, in this decade, in the 2010s. House of Lies. That's their whole business as consultants, is they're basically lying to their advertising clients or whoever that they're dealing with about their success, their failure, or how we can help you or not help you. My point is, it's what the advertising industry has been based on for the longest time, is not telling clients, not telling the consumer the absolute truth, bending it if you can, and sometimes... That's who you are. You become somebody that can't even be straight with yourself. You can't even tell yourself the truth a lot of the time. So it is kind of funny, but this does have the Hollywood-esque ending where Nick and Darcy do get together. Here, she could have dumped him, but it's a love story and it's good for Valentine's Day.
No, I agree, and it's a fun movie to watch. And kind of let's hit some of the fun facts, if you will.
Give me some.
So we talked about the Nike ad, the No Games, Just Sports, and how cool that was. The Nike representatives in the movie are all actually Nike ad reps. They're not
actors.
There
you go.
How about that?
So, and that's authenticity. I wonder, did they ever use that in and around a campaign? We got to look that up. Or maybe somebody can send us a message on social media through our Facebook page or our Twitter about that. We got to look up that Nike ad. Did it ever run anywhere besides the movie?
Today. You know, if they're talking women empowerment in 2000, women empowerment 2019 is a totally different ballgame. That'd
Absolutely.
Be a perfect ad for today. So moving on, Mel Gibson in the scene where he waxes his legs in the bathroom, he actually did wax his legs and says it didn't hurt nearly as much as it hurt in the movie. But he kept taunting all the women saying, come on, this doesn't hurt.
Right.
So you can imagine he had some fun with that. The film was originally pitched to Touchstone Pictures in 1996. It was going to be called Head Games, and it was going to star Tim Allen. I don't think that would have been as good.
And again, he was hot for Tool Time in and around that time, the sitcoms.
Toy Story.
Toy Story, right, that he ends up making. So
Santa Claus. Yeah, he had some big stuff.
I think it works better with Mel Gibson. But again, Mel Gibson was sizzling hot in the 90s in terms of box office success, so you can understand why they went to him on the big screen.
Well, we alluded to this earlier, but just for the record, the film has three Oscar winners, Mel Gibson, Helen Hunt, and Marissa Tomei. The three Oscar nominees that are also in it, Bette Midler, Valerie Perrine, who is one of his assistants, and Alan Alda.
And by the way, we totally glossed over that Marissa Tomei's character ends up sleeping with Nick, that Lola gets with Nick, because that's what she's been wanting, that's what she's been desiring, and then she realizes it's not really what he wants. She's a conquest of his, and it breaks her heart.
Yeah, we definitely glossed over, and that's one of the greatest lines in the movie is while they're having sex, and she's not enjoying it. He can hear her thoughts. She's like, what time does Britney Spears come on Leno? And then she's like, just get this over so I can start faking it. And then he kind of regroups and they end up having what she calls life-altering sex, and then he doesn't call her. And she was very specific with that she didn't want to get hurt and want to take it slow. But, you know, so she shows up at his house later on, and he's like, how long have you been here? And she's like, 3-4 hours. And then she's like, come on. She's like, I know your secret. And he thinks she figured out that he's reading girls' minds. He's like, it's funny no one else figured out. She's like, come on, you're totally and completely gay.
Right.
And so, of course, that throws him off. But he can hear her thoughts saying, please tell me you're gay. Please tell me I haven't been dumped and used by another guy. So he agrees to the fact. He plays along and says
exactly.
He's as gay as it gets because he didn't want to hurt her feelings. And that's kind of part of him turning into a nice guy. The old Nick would have just laughed at her or walked past her, you know?
Right, exactly.
Or turned the corner when he saw her as opposed to talking to her. So. That's kind of, yeah, you'd mentioned, yeah, we definitely glossed right past that, but it certainly is one of the major turning points in the movie.
Like that as well. All right, anything else on the trivia or on the nuggets? Was Helen Hunt Darcy all along, or did somebody else get offered Helen Hunt's role? I don't know. I'm looking. I'm asking. You're the guru.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't seen anything about that. Here's one thing I did not notice, but I'll look next time I'm watching. It says that in one scene in the movie that Nick's daughter Alex has braces, but the rest of the movie they're gone.
Now that,
so I don't know if it's like the beginning when she's talking, but you know, kind of
that's
the opening,
right?
So
that's a continuity error of epic proportions there that you should notice. I don't remember that from seeing that the movie. We have to look again on whether or not Ashley Johnson was going through braces maybe in real life, or they wanted the character to have braces and they just decided to take them off and didn't and just waited for somebody to catch it later on in the movie.
I don't know. Pretty crazy. So a cameo. This is one that I did not notice, but I will definitely pay attention. The great James Cameron, who made The Terminators, True Lies,
and
Titanic, Avatar.
There
so,
it is.
So many,
from our recent,
so many
we've seen
movies
that where
he's
I,
given us.
Where
the
I, couldn't
Abyss.
Give up, I couldn't come up with the Avatar on the recent one. So Cameron has a cameo in this? Where?
Yes. It says, the morning Nick returns to work after gaining his power, and he bumps into Erin, the file girl in the lobby, Cameron can be seen waiting on the chair next to them reading the paper. That tells you how long ago this was. He's reading the paper.
So, yeah, exactly. A newspaper. What are those? Especially my 10-year-old twins. What are those?
There's a couple things on the awards front. Mel Gibson was nominated for Golden Globe for Best Actor, Musical or Comedy. And then the Blockbuster Entertainment Awards, one of your favorite things, Blockbuster Video.
Yep.
He was also nominated for Favorite Actor in a Comedy Romance. Helen Hunt actually won for this movie, Favorite Actress in Comedy or Romance. Mark Fierstein and Marissa Tomei were also nominated in the supporting categories.
Very nice. All right. So
ASCAP Award for Top Box Office Films.
Right, the ASCAP
Alan
Awards.
Yeah, Alan Silvestri won for Best Score.
Ah,
so
very good.
That is one of the things I really enjoyed about this movie. We've got, you know, classic music, Sinatra, Temptation is just it's certainly one of those that it kind of even adds more class to the movie, if you will.
They definitely were paying out some music royalties to some of the greats here in this. So it did very well. And oh, by the way, they wanted to possibly remake this, right? Or they were going to try to remake this. And then as it turns out, they did remake it, but they reversed the plot, and it's what men want, right? That's the whole idea. But were they seriously ever at any point thinking about remaking this or doing a sequel to see what Nick and Darcy and the family's up to? Maybe not. I guess not.
I had read plenty of times that it was looking at being remade. I never saw anything about, you know, sequel-wise. It would have been interesting to see what ended up happening, although – you know, it would have been a different movie because all of Nick's chauvinistic stuff would have been out the window. I don't know how they would have remade it if he cheated on her.
Well, but if he can't, can't tell what women really want anymore, maybe he goes back to being the old Nick in a lot of ways, and he dumps.
Or maybe he loses some of his mojo in the ad world. It's hard to say, but yeah, What Men Want that came out this past weekend while we're recording this had Taraji P. Henson in the main character, and she worked with sports agents, and she thought she was up kind of for a promotion and basically missed out on it. You know, she was passed over for another guy. And the funny part is the guy who's like the in charge of the agency is played by Brian Bosworth. Nick Ivers played by Brian Bosworth.
The Boz. The Boz making an appearance in the modern day in Dr. Pepper ads around college football and in What Men Want.
Have you ever met him?
Have not met the Boz. How about you now? Because you're more in the Fort Worth, the Dallas area. And, of course, Oklahoma football was big and always playing Texas and Dallas. You've had any interactions with the Boz? No.
Here's my funny – I have a funny Bosworth story. So, you know, I know him from getting run over by Bo Jackson on Monday Night Football. I don't know him as much from the OU other than the pictures I've seen in the 30 for 30.
So if you don't know, Bosworth, famous college football player, controversial at Oklahoma at a time which they were kind of – a renegade program. He got in trouble, Bosworth, with the NCAA. He eventually got banned for a steroid test. Bad boy image, ends up getting drafted in the NFL, and then that's what we're talking about here. So go ahead, Bosworth.
Yeah, so my Bosworth story, I'll make it quick. I live in the DFW area, and about 3 hours north of us is Oklahoma City. And for some really difficult journalism work, we went up and covered the Oklahoma City Thunder Girls auditions. And he was one of the celebrity judges.
The Thunder Girls are the basketball team in Oklahoma City's dancers. Tough assignment.
Right. Yeah, it's like the cheerleader dance team that goes out and performs in the timeouts and stuff. Yeah, so we went up and covered their auditions, which is really cool. It's like a pageant thing. They have it at a place called the Riverwind Casino in a big auditorium there. And Brian Bosworth was one of the celebrity judges. And so I asked the public relations person, you know, when you're in journalism, you don't just go talk to the person. You ask the PR person, and they take you over to talk to them so they know it's okay. They took me over. He could not have been any less interested in talking to us. he's up here with Miss Oklahoma and Mrs.
Exactly.
Oklahoma and all these girls. And then he's got some spare guys who want to come talk to him about football. But, yeah, so I did meet him, and I thought about asking him about the great Stone Cold, the 1991 biker movie he was in.
Oh, my God.
I thought that might be the ender, so I decided to stay away from him.
Ill-fated TV shows. Yeah, Bosworth all the way, yes.
So other members in the cast we know, Richard Roundtree is in this. We know him from playing Shaft,
right,
the original Shaft back in the 70s.
Right.
And then there's I haven't seen the movie yet, but I've seen parts of it. There's a poker game. In the poker game, you've got Mark Cuban, who's the current owner of the Dallas Mavericks,
mm-hmm.
also on Shark Tank. You've got Devontae Freeman, the running back for the Falcons. Shaquille O'Neal, who we know from the Lakers.
They're all at the poker table.
Grant Hill, Carl Anthony Towns. I believe they're all in this. So anyways, I believe it's something where when she's eavesdropping on the guys, when they say, oh, no, we're not doing anything, and then she can hear him say, oh, but yeah, we're meeting for poker later on. We just don't want her to come. And so she shows up to the poker game. I believe that's kind of how it works.
That's tremendous. That's a serious poker game with a lot of coin being put in
the middle
of the table.
I was going to say, something tells me they're not playing for a penny a point. I'm just going to go on a limb.
Probably not. All right, what else? What else do we know for and what else do we need to know to put a bow here on What Women Want?
One thing we like to do towards the end of the shows is talk about what the critics thought when the movie came out. So from the December 15th, 2000, the great Roger Ebert, who we know from Siskel and Ebert, he gave the movie 3 stars. And his kind of opening comments on it says, "What Women Want is very simple. A man willing to listen to women when they're speaking to him." They also want a lot of other things, but that will do for starters. And this we learn from What Women Want, a comedy about a man who is jolted by electricity and develops the ability to read women's minds.
Okay.
And that's so he enjoys it. And he says, like, kind of moving later on, says, if the movie is imperfect, it's certainly not boring and it's often very funny, as in the solo dance that Nick does in his apartment to Frank Sinatra singing "I Won't Dance." This, we imagine, the way Tom Cruise's character in Risky Business might have ended some of his evenings if he'd grown up to be Nick Marshall, which is a great line. So anyways, yeah, if you read through RogerEbert.com, you can find this article, this review, and he seemed to be a fan of this movie. And, you know, kind of like I said, it's weird watching now knowing, you know, what happens 6 or 7 years later with Mel Gibson with his anti-Semitic rant and stuff like that.
Sure.
But, you know, and he's done many other things. It's not just that one thing. But in this movie, I thought he did a good job playing Nick Marshall. Although Helen Hunt did a great job playing Darcy McGuire. The acting was good. It's a fun movie, and kind of you and I talk about this a lot because we both have journalism stuff we do that we'll have the TV on in the background while we're working. This is kind of one of those, like, if I can't find anything on TV, sometimes I'll just throw it on. I've got on DVR and kind of have some, you know, familiar voices going in the background.
Well, and especially when you start looking at, we didn't mention Delta Burke up until this point. I mean, because Delta Burke was a big deal as an actress, including Designing Women, speaking of sitcoms. And I believe that was CBS back in the day, too, that had a lot of success.
She's and I think of her from First and Ten. Do you
First
remember that?
First and Ten, the HBO movie. The HBO movie where she is the fictitious L.A. football team. She's the owner of the football team there at the very beginning. And, of course, she's a...
Was that a nod to Georgia Frontieri? I don't remember.
I think so. But she's around it. Alan Alda's around it. So, like you mentioned, there's different people that you see in and around this movie that we enjoy. We enjoy watching. We enjoy seeing. All right. So we're good on What Women Want here. Mel Gibson, romantic comedy, not bang, bang, shoot 'em up like some of his other movies, going all the way back to Mad Max and some of the other movies, showing some diversity here.
Yeah, I thought it was a fun movie, and I would recommend it as just, you know, kind of one of those, like maybe a good Sunday afternoon movie. Right now we're in February, so Sunday afternoons there's no football. It's cold outside. Here in DFW it's been the 30s and raining. So this is kind of one of those good movies to kill a couple hours and watch. And even though there's some things in it that some people might kind of roll their eyes at these days, it's a pretty harmless movie and pretty entertaining to watch.
Oh, there's a lot of things when we go in the way back in our wheelhouse, as we like to say, with we've seen that stuff that wouldn't have flown in the present day back in the 80s and 90s.
That reminds me. So this past week was the 45-year anniversary of the release of Mel Brooks' Blazing Saddles.
Oh, my God,
you want
yes.
Talk about a movie that would never be made today. It's
exactly.
Funny. My friends and I have joked about how there's no way that would ever get released today. It would never even get financed. And I saw Rob Lowe retweet, like it was something along the lines of Hollywood Reporter posted it, and Rob Lowe retweeted a movie that in capital letters would never get made today.
Yeah, of course. We
and
live in a different
from
time
1974.
Period. How about that? But yeah. Still, what women want works. And again, what men want at the time, at the beginning of 2019 here, is out in theaters as the follow-up and a good love story to be in and around. So they can give us some reaction to this. Again, on social media, you can follow him at The Famous J on Twitter. Follow this show at We've Seen That on Twitter. Our Facebook page, stay engaged there. Jay does a great job basically giving you lots of different things on the Facebook page about movies, famous movies, anniversaries, things that we're looking at doing. We publicize there and also on the Instagram as well at We've Seen That. So we're good on that. And do we want to give the audience a bonus here? It's Valentine's this week, but there's something else going on. Do we want to give our loyal following here a bonus for later this week? What are you thinking?
Yeah, and here's kind of the thing. You know, we were talking before about, you know, it's Valentine's week. We need to do a Sleepless in Seattle, What Women Want kind of movie. You know, but it's also Daytona 500 week.
Let's go.
And
Let's
Days
go,
of Thunder
guys.
Is one of our all-time
NASCAR,
favorite movies.
And
since we love our audience, we decided not to do either or. We decided to do both.
Yeah, we couldn't. Well, I mean, you and I were going back and forth about, okay, well, it's Valentine's week. Yeah, but it's a Daytona 500. Yeah, but we need to do a romantic. Yeah, but it's the Daytona 500. It's NASCAR.
And you know, it's hard to pick. You know, if you're talking 80s and 90s, how do you pick between Mel Gibson and Tom Cruise? You just take them both, right?
Well, exactly. And so in a way... Now, stick with me here. In a way, Days of Thunder on the NASCAR track, Cole Trickle, Harry Hogg, Build Me a Car and I'll Win Daytona is a little bit of a love story. Am I stretching too much that it is a little bit of a love story in addition to a NASCAR crash 'em up, you know, testosterone
filled
movie?
It's hard to get
much
more romantic than him explaining drafting to her with some Sweet and Low packets.
Sweet. Very nice. Dr. Lewicki. Good stuff with Days of Thunder. So we're going to do like a double feature later in this week. Later
right,
in this
we
week
new,
at the time
new
you're listening.
We have every right. Wednesday. So if you're listening to this one, this came out on a Wednesday, and we will release Days of Thunder on Friday. It's just kind of a bonus to everybody.
Woo!
It's cold. There's not a lot to do at the moment. You know, so you got some extra time. There's no Super Bowls. You know, go ahead and you can give us
NASCAR's
a listen to both episodes.
NASCAR's biggest race, because I live in Florida, no offense, Jay. NASCAR's, because you're in Fort Worth where they have a NASCAR race in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the Texas Motor Speedway. NASCAR's biggest race is the first race. It's like their Super Bowl. It's Daytona
yeah,
in
Super
February.
Super Bowl of motorsports, isn't it?
It is. So we need to talk about that. And I believe we're going to have a special guest as well on that one. So we'll stand by for the audience to hear our special guest talking NASCAR. There's a tease, Jay Betzel, for later in the week when we preview this one, when we talk about Days of Thunder and we talk a little bit about the Daytona 500. It's going to be great stuff here. So it's a double feature. You mentioned Sarah Paulson being in Ocean's 8, the Thieves movie, the follow-up to the Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13 with George Clooney, Brad Pitt. Sarah Paulson's one of the characters along with Sandra Bullock and Cate Blanchett. But James Corden, the British comedian's in there, and he has a line in the movie that we've laughed about in my household ever since that movie has come on recently on HBO. It's a twofa. It's a twofa because she's going back at the ex-boyfriend. She's trying to not only do the robbery, but go against the ex-boyfriend. So in this case, for this week, for we've seen that, it's a twofa, Jay Betzel. We're going for two.
There we go.
I like that. All right, so are we good? What Women Want? We're good. The audience needs to go check it out. Where can they check it out right now, right? It's available on premium cable, I believe.
It's currently airing on Stars. I don't believe it's on Stars On Demand, but if you have not seen it or have not seen it in a while, it is on Amazon Prime. I think it's one of those you can go rent it for like
$2. YouTube as well, you can find it. So you can go spend your $2.99 or your $4.99 or whatever it is for your subscription and go check these out. So Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt, we're going out here. Some classic music once again on What Women Want from the year 2000, right at the edge of our, we always say and more, at the edge of our 80s, 90s, and more, right?
So I need to mention real quick before we go, if you want to hear our back catalog, it's on Radio Influence, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and TuneIn.
Yeah, so radioinfluence.com is maybe where you found this show. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. The show comes automatically to you when there's a new one, as Jay said, typically on Wednesdays. We debut a new episode. This week, it's a twofa. I just had to say it again. Because we'll have Days of Thunder later in the week as well. So check all of that out here as part of We've Seen That. And again, the catalog has everything from The Fugitive to Rocky IV. You name it. White Man Can't Jump, Die Hard, The Pelican Brief, on and on down the list. It's all great stuff.
Yeah, and if you get through all 20-something of our shows, a couple of movie podcasts that I love that I highly recommend, 80s All Over and Junk Food Cinema. Yeah. If you like our shows, you will love those shows. And then kind of in passing and farewell, I will say it is Valentine's Day week, and men, do not forget, even if they say they don't, your girlfriends would love to have flowers.
Something. Don't forget. Flowers, dinner out, card, phone call at the minimum, something. I'm right with you on that.
It doesn't have to be a Lexus with a big bow on it.
Exactly.
Just more is the thought that counts a lot.
You romantic, you, looking out for the women in all of our lives. Famous Jay, thank you.
Take care, everybody.
All right, there we go. That is this edition of We've Seen That for What Women Want. I'm TJ Reeves. Again, double feature coming with Days of Thunder for the Daytona 500 at the time that we're taping later in the week. Second one coming back around. We'll talk to you next time on We've Seen That. Bye.
This is a Forking Around Town with Tracy Guida Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
You know, I've only been to Philly once. Anything you remember or recommend? Because I actually, my kids go every summer. Their dad is from New Jersey, so they go up there and then they go to Philly, and they're kind of starting to get into the food scene.
There's a lot of big known chefs now in Philly. Not that there was before, but the restaurant scene exploded, especially in downtown Philadelphia. When I was a kid going through culinary school, I went to the restaurant school in Philadelphia. And, you know, one of the great places during your break to go get lunch was the Reading Terminal. They had the Amish with live chickens and beautiful rotisserie chicken and ice cream. And they had the Pennsylvania Dutch making pretzels to order. There would be a line around the building just trying to get in before they even opened to get a fresh pretzel that just came through the oven and then was brushed with butter. Oh, it was incredible. And then there was I can't remember the name. There was another place called Denix that had this, I'll never forget the taste. It's this beautiful roasted pork sandwich that had this au jus on it that was covered with some garlic scented broccolini, and it had big chunks of Parmesan cheese on it on a delicious Amoroso roll. I mean, that was my childhood. So I grew up in South Philadelphia. So, you know, we say it's not a sandwich unless it drips on you.
Forking Around Town with Tracy Guida can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.